It's an old story. Depending on who tells it, what source, it has varying details, but the original, at least, is attributed to a Buddhist monk years and years ago. A man is sitting by the road when he hears the distant sound of hoof. Wow. Let's start over. A man is sitting by the road when he hears the distant sound of hoofbeats approaching. Looking up, he is able to see a horse as a speck on the horizon. Continuing to watch, though, the horse is growing larger rapidly. He realizes that it is running at full tilt. When it gets close enough for him to see that it is carrying a rider, he draws the conclusion that the man must be headed somewhere important in a tremendous hurry. As the horse and rider pass him, the man asks, "Where are you going?" In response to the man's query, the rider shouts over his horse, over his shoulder, "I don't know. Ask the horse." I think that pretty much sums up the majority of people in this world. They have no idea where they're going, but they're in a huge hurry to get there. It's not new by any stretch of the imagination. It's how Luke describes the inhabitants of Ephesus in Acts chapter 19. Flip over there with me. Acts chapter 19, starting in verse 28. It says, "When they heard this and were filled with rage, they began crying out, saying, 'Great is Artemis of the Ephesians.' And the city was filled with confusion. They rushed with one accord into the theater, dragging along Gaius and Aristarchus, Paul's traveling companions from Macedonia. When Paul wanted to go into the assembly, the disciples would not let him. Also, some of the Asiarchs, who were friends of his, sent to him and repeatedly urged him not to enter into the theater." Now listen to verse 32. "But some were shouting one thing and some another, for the assembly was in confusion, and the majority of them did not know what cause they had come together." City's in an uproar. And yet when they riot, much like all people do when they riot, they had no idea why. Some are shouting one thing, some are shouting another. Everybody's confused. They're not even sure why they're there. They're just simply riding that horse of mob mentality as fast as it'll go, wherever it takes them. No idea where the horse was going, but they were willing to ride it to the end. I said that describes a large portion of our world. It should not describe the mature Christian. It should not describe the majority of us here. It should not describe much of our listening audience. I want you to watch, and we're going to go back and read just a portion of what Jeremy read. I want you to watch Ephesians 4, verses 11 through 16 develop. "And he," God, "he," Christ, "gave some as apostles, some as prophets, some as evangelists, and some as pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints for the work of service, to the building up of the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. As a result, we are no longer to be children, no longer tossed here and there by waves, carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness, by deceitful scheming. Speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ, for whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by that what every joint supplies according to the proper working of each individual part causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. Let's break that down. Verse 11. Paul says that God has equipped those that he has called to leadership positions. And he mentions some of them specifically. The first two are relevant to the first century, the apostles and the prophets. But then he goes on and mentions those that are going to continue to exist past that first century, evangelists or ministers or preachers, whatever you want to say, pastors, which is another word for elder, shepherd, bishop, overseer, and teachers. He's equipped them so that, verse 12, they can turn around and equip and build up the body for service. So that that group of people, in their leadership and in their teaching and in their passing on of wisdom and knowledge, can take the whole and make it useful to serve. So that we progress toward unity, to a knowledge of Jesus, to the point that we become mature, to the point that we actually can grow into the stature that belongs to the fullness of Christ. So that what? Next verse. So that we're no longer children. So that we reach a level of maturity. So that we grow up. So we're no longer riding the waves of any and every doctrine. We're no longer riding the horse that's out of control. And if you go back and tie it to the very beginning of this context in verse 1, it's how we reach the point that we can walk in a manner worthy of our calling. If we plan to walk in a way that pleases God, that lives up to who we are, there's going to have to be a level of maturity that allows us to stay off the waves, to stay off the runaway horse. So what have we said so far? One of the goals in the Christian life is maturity. Is a level of maturity that keeps us off the shifting waves of cultural doctrine. And as we tie that to our horse, a level of maturity that keeps us off of a runaway horse. Now then, we said that part's for the world and we're supposed to be mature enough that we avoid it. Sadly, that's not always the case. Even the mature child of God can lose control of the horse occasionally. Now then, if we stay in the context of Ephesians 4, sometimes that horse in charge of our journey can be false doctrine, leading us wherever he wants us to go. We can buy into what the world's selling and get distracted from the truth. But the things that Lloyd and I were talking about and the things that I've been considering this week, are there other horses in our lives that run away with us? Are there passions and desires, temptations, or are there things that drive us that sometimes we lose control of and we jump on the back of a horse and have no idea where it's going, but we are riding it full tilt? And I'm going to say absolutely. And I'm going to say absolutely for good reason. What about that horse being fear? Can our fears, real or made up, become a runaway horse leading us somewhere that we do not necessarily want to go, where we're not even sure where the outcome is going to be? Peter's did. On a couple of occasions at least. In Matthew chapter 14, Peter is the man for a moment. He's walking on water. He's taking the coolest walk you could possibly ever take in this world. Until he takes his eyes off Jesus, he focuses on the wind and the waves, and his fears run away with him. He jumps on the back of fear as his horse. He begins to ride it away from Jesus, and he begins to sing. I promise you, when he took that first step out of the boat, that was not how he wanted the journey to end. That horse is taking him somewhere he doesn't want to go. But he's riding it anyway. What about in the court of the high priest? His fear of being lumped with Jesus. His fear of being the next one arrested and standing on trial before the high priest ran him headlong into denying Jesus three times. And it's not until that third time, it's not until the rooster crows, it's not until Jesus turns and makes eye contact with him that he reins in the horse and realizes where he's standing. What about our greed? Is it possible that a desire for earthly gain can run away with us and lead us into a life we regret? Did Judas? Judas is one of the 12. Judas is one in the circle. Judas has got to see most everything Jesus has done and heard most everything that he's taught for 3+ years. And yet his greed ran him head first into betrayal. A betrayal that left his gain so empty, he took his own life. Do you think that's how he wanted it to end up when he started out? Absolutely not. You can tell by his reaction. He throws the silver back down at his feet. And he says, I don't want any part of this anymore. What about Ananias and Sapphira? Do you think they really wanted to ride that horse that far? No, they wanted to make a little money. They didn't want to drop dead at Peter's feet. The horse got away from them. Can a desire to fit in, a desire to not stand out and be different, become a runaway horse that leads us to do, to say, to be places and do things that we should not and would not normally do? Again, Peter. Galatians chapter 2, Paul writes that Peter had such a desire to fit in that he started out eating with the Gentiles. He's at the lunch table in the corner with the misfits and those on the outside. But then James sends some of the bigwigs from Jerusalem down to check on them. And they come rolling up and walk in the door, and Peter wants to fit in with them. So he jumps up from that table and he runs and he sits at the Jew table. And Paul said I had to call him on it because he'd ridden that horse way too far. So yeah, a desire to be part of the crowd can run away with us. What about struggling faith? What about a horse that decides that it's going to make up its own plan? Abraham lost faith in the plan of God. He tried to do things his way. And his horse led him to have a child he wasn't supposed to have. What about our anger? Can our anger run away with us, get the best of us, cause us to say, do things that we, under normal circumstances, when we've got a sense of a head's nod? Absolutely. It cost Moses. Moses rode that runaway horse and it kept him out of the promised land. What about our lust? David rode it long enough, it led him down the path of murder and deceit. It destroyed the life of a good man. It cost the life of an innocent child, and it changed the course of Bathsheba's life forever. What about ignorance or worry or faith in the wrong source? Any of those things and a jillion other things can become a runaway horse that bolts out of control and leads us down a path we can't even see. So that when someone looks at us and says, "Where are you going in such a hurry?" we have to throw up our hands and say, "I don't have any idea. Ask the horse. I'm just riding my fears. I'm just riding my worry. I'm just riding my anger. I'm riding my tongue," or whatever. And here's the thing, and I want you to listen. And I want you to listen very carefully and make sure that you hear me. There are going to be days when all of us take a ride. There are going to be days when we're riding on our fears or our greed or our desire to fit in or our lack of faith or anger or faith in the wrong source or ignorance or worry. There are going to be days where we're just not controlling those things and they're controlling us. Days when one or more of them get the best of us because we're human. It's just going to happen. We don't always have everything under control. We don't always have all our ducks in a row. Sometimes we don't even know where the little rascals are at. And life just gets away from us. But here's what we're here to talk about today. We cannot let them run away with us. Since we've already addressed the idea of reaching a level of maturity that helps us to avoid those out of control moments, those out of control rides, I want you to notice with me a couple of characteristics of that maturity that we've been talking about. Number one comes from Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 14. Reading from the New Century Version, the Hebrew writer writes, "Solid food is for those who are grown up. They are mature enough to know the difference between good and evil." Maturity brings the ability to distinguish between what's right and what's wrong. And staying within our context this morning, that includes the ability to assess whether or not we're controlling the horse or it's controlling us. Maturity says, "Hey, you're on a runaway horse and you're about to go over the cliff, or you're about to crash into the tree, or you're about to end up somewhere you don't want to be. You better get off. You better get it under control." Maturity can assess the situation. Second comes from Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things, there is no law." In the same way that a tree must reach maturity before it begins producing fruit, and I'll give you an example. A transplanted pecan tree that's 6 feet tall will take an additional 6 to 10 years to begin to produce. In that same way, that level of maturity that has to be reached, it takes some level of maturity for a Christian to begin to produce all of the fruit he's capable of producing. That doesn't mean when we come out of the waters of baptism we can't produce. We certainly can. But what are we going to do them all right, perfectly the first? No. It takes some growing up. And one of the things, in my mind at least, that takes some of the most maturing, some of the most growing up, is self-control. It takes a while to get things under control. The ability, in the case of our lesson today, to rein in the horse. Our ability to rein in our fears, to rein in our worries, to rein in our doubts, to rein in our angers. And here's the key, here's the key, here's the key. And it comes still right there in Galatians chapter 5. I want you to notice, as Paul writes about these fruit, who is controlling the horse when we reach this level of maturity. Verse 16. I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. For the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. These are in opposition to one another, so that you may not do the things that you please. If you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. The Spirit is the one controlling the horse if we're producing this kind of fruit. So when we get to self-control, we're talking a whole lot more about God control than self-control. We're talking about giving the reins to God. We're talking about Him controlling the horse, because what did we say earlier? We're human. There are days I cannot control the horse. There are days that my fears are going to get the best of me, or my tongue, or whatever. And so here's the point. There will be moments in your life, no matter what level of maturity you've reached, maybe even days, and if it's a really bad one, it might be weeks, when we feel like we are losing control of the horse. Moments when fear dominates my thinking, that no matter how hard I try, I cannot refocus. Days when my worries are overwhelming me. Times when my faith is struggling. Time when I'm in danger of letting my anger take control. Moments when my tongue is struggling to break free of the bridle. That is when we have to make sure that we have given the reins back to God. That we've turned the horse back over to Him. And so here's the good news, and there is good news. The good news is the horse is tameable. Whether it's my anger, my fear, my worry, my doubt, whatever those human tendencies are that I struggle with at that moment, those things are tameable regardless which horse you're riding, or horses. Regardless what one you're struggling to control, it can be tamed by the master horseman. But we have to let Him tame it. We have to give Him the addiction. We have to give Him the temptation. We have to give Him the desire. We have to give Him the lack of self-control and let Him control it. We have to give Him the reins. Or else, we will find ourselves constantly on a runaway horse. And if we don't get off that horse in time, we're going to crash over the cliff. Or it's going to take us down a path that we're going to regret for the rest of our lives. And so I'm going to beg you this morning. I don't know what it is in your life that you struggle with the most. Some of you I do. Some of you I do not. But whatever it is, that horse can be tamed if you'll give the reins to Jesus. If you're not a child of God, you need to obey the gospel. It's the only way. It's the only way to give Him charge of your life. You need to come and confess your faith in Christ Jesus as the Son of God. You need to repent. You need to leave that life of sin behind. You need to be baptized in the waters of baptism. And you need to come up and you need to hand in the reins. If you're already a child of God, look, we never reach the point that we're perfect. We're striving. We're working on it, but we never get there. So there's still that horse every once in a while that starts to get out from underneath us. If that's your struggle this week with any one of those things, give the reins to the Father as we stand and sing.